Many bands and artists have changed their sound in order to become more mainstream and get more success. It's an all too common, unfortunate, like, hazard of the music business, specifically the business side of it. However, there are those bands that have stuck to their guns since the beginning. They continued, in some cases, are still continuing to make the music that they want to make in the way that they want to make it. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we're going to be telling you all about 10 bands who never compromised in order to sell out. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. And welcome back, everybody, moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages. Welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and I am your host for this cycle of mayhem that happens here at the circus every Tuesday. For those of you that tune in live on our Facebook broadcasts, YouTube and Twitch as well. And for the rest of the world, you'll be listening to us on iTunes, Spotify, places like that. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please go ahead and give us a 5-star and say something nice about us. iTunes is a sort of like the Google business, you know, for podcasts. So if you can do good on iTunes, you're going to do good in podcasting. If you can make it there, you'll make it anywhere, as they say. So,
or sing.
Yeah, exactly. So, guys, that is something that would help us out. Also, want to give a shout out to a couple of sponsors. First, I want to shout out to Wolf's Customs, wolfscustoms.online. Get custom paint job done on your musical instrument of any type. Drums, guitars, basses, accordion, swinet, flugelhorn, whatever you have. Get a hold of Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at wolfscustoms.online and they will hook you up. They do amazing work and you are going to love it. Tell them Ludini sent you. Shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app, and you can listen to great music 24/7. And coming up in about a week or so, I will be at Nashville Rock and Pod Expo in sunny Nashville, Tennessee, and Music City. It's going to be a good time. I'm going to be presenting there along with a bunch of really other cool people. There's a lot of rock stars that are going to be there giving interviews, hanging out, signing autographs. It's a lot of cool memorabilia. You can get more information at NashvilleRockandPodExpo.com. And I'm going to turn it over now to one of the other folks here while I make a few adjustments.
So you're super bored with talking now already?
Yes, I'm done talking.
Wow.
Well, my show is Hot Weeks with Lily Six on Rock Rage Radio Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and I do have a cool interview this week with the progressive metal band Demi Ara, so check them out. Ooh. It's female-fronted, and super nice girl, and the whole band was super fun, and you'll love their music if you do love progressive metal.
If yes. Cool. Good. And guys, also, I'm going to be doing something kind of interesting, going to a concert.
What? Dun, dun.
Yes,
I already knew that.
I know, I'm going to a concert. I don't even know where this concert is. I'm so busy with everything going on in my life with dealing with, you know.
It's Charlie.
Yeah. Is it?
Yes.
I have no idea where it was. I just found out.
Wow.
It is the Black Crowes, nice. And they're going to be doing the entire Shake Your Moneymaker tour. They're really going to play the whole album. So we are looking forward to doing that
most stuff.
Excellent.
That most excellent. Be ye excellent to one another. And party on, dudes. Speaking of that, we're going to be giving this bad boy away. We have our Blu-ray that we did as a giveaway to for new subscribers. If you want to know more about subscribing, go to LouLombardiMusic.com. Our website is LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Either one is great. But we're giving away this 3-film collection, Bill and Ted Face the Music, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and of course the classic, the irrepressible Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
All good soundtracks as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all good soundtracks, of course. So That is something that y'all gonna want to check out. we're gonna be giving that away a little bit later on.
Okay.
All right. So we're talking about these bands that just they didn't care.
I don't give.
They're just doing it. They're gonna do their thing. They're gonna do their thing, and that's all they're gonna do. Yeah, exactly. And it's encouraged when you. Excuse me. When you sit down to do a list like this, it's encouraging because you realize there's more than you realize. I mean, there's more of those type of bands than you realize.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's way more than 10, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, young folks out there, you can make great music the way you want to make it and still get over. People are interested in, you know, different stuff. It doesn't all have to be homogenized, the same thing, blah blah blah. So I'm gonna go as usual. We're gonna start with Lily because you know she knows everything. You know,
I'm a woman, I think I know everything. What? So there's that. Yes, I'm a female. I know you didn't know. Secret's out. Wow. Jake is up
and the news is out. They finally found me. The renegade who had it made.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
My Aunt Cookie says hello.
Hi, Aunt Cookie.
Hello, my Aunt Cookie. Oh, Aunt Cookie. Oh,
Aunt Cookie sounds delicious.
Oh, no. C is for Aunt Cookie. That's good enough for me. Yeah, C is for Aunt Cookie. Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, the first
time. And Aunt Cookie just tuned out.
Goodbye, Aunt Cookie. Thank you so much for
She's
coming.
She's like, I've had enough.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Oh, you said Aunt Cookie. I thought you meant Aunt Cookie.
No.
Oh, sorry.
That would be yucky.
Aunt Cookie. Aunt
Cookie. Oh, they're Aunt's Cookie.
Is this your Aunt Cookie?
Now we've switched accents.
Oh, why not?
All right. Go ahead, Lily.
Alrighty, so the first pick on my list is the Ramones, as my shirt. American punk rock band that formed in New York City, Queens to be specific, often cited as the first true punk rock group, recognition of the band's importance built over the years, and they are now mentioned in many assessments of all-time great rock music. When they first burst onto the New York club scene, change was in the air. After years of getting bogged down by prog rock and heavy metal, these four street rats from Manhattan took rock and roll back to its roots with three chord jams that would go on to kickstart the punk rock movement. So that means these guys were left with big rock star mansions like all the other classic rock bands, right? Not so much. That's not really their thing. Instead of moving into some ritzy territory and writing more lofty tracks, the Ramones always stuck to their guns when it came to writing rock songs that were short and to the point. I can't breathe.
Ooh.
Contrary.
Take a breath.
Breathe,
I forgot
breathe.
To do that. Contrary to what many people believe, the actual sound of the band did change considerably over the years, with the band dipping their toes into everything from hard rock to pop and even heavy metal on some of their later works. They may have songs that are still played on the radio to this day, but the band used the rest of their career to build upon their momentum with any genre that suited them. Even if you're sick and tired of hearing Blitzkrieg Bop, the Ramones earned the distinction of getting heaps of praise from fans and deserving every bit of it. So they pretty much stuck to what they wanted to write.
Right.
Yes, there was some progression. Yes, there was some change, but it was basically just punk.
It was just punk.
It was just punk.
And see, that's the thing that we have to think about with these bands that we're exploring this evening or this afternoon, depending on when you're listening. what is selling out and what is just, we want to do something different.
Evolution.
You know, mm-hmm. What is, you know, how do you,
oh my, no, don't do that.
You know, how do you distinguish that or how do you, you know, discern between the two? I think it has to do with the motivation, but then do you ever really know anybody's motivation? So we're just going to kind of let that brew in the background for you guys while we go ahead through this. Kevin, what do you got?
Well, I do want to add to Lily's Ramones.
Please.
Do you know where they got their surname, Ramones?
You know what? I did read about it, but I did not mention it. So go ahead.
I actually have a little tidbit.
Please,
then.
Go ahead.
So apparently they were inspired by Paul McCartney, who would check into hotels using the pseudonym Paul Ramone. So... they all became the Ramones. So I thought that was kind of
even cool. Though that wasn't their last name.
It wasn't
what?
Their last name.
What? Magic.
It yeah. Was their last right? Name. No. What?
They're all related.
They were all brothers. It was a very big family.
It's a very big family.
Very big family. Well, they all kind of looked alike.
I mean,
the
hair, they all had the look.
The leather jackets. All right. So I'm going to go with your friend of mine, the late, great Thomas Earl Petty. What do you think of that, Lou?
Monsieur.
Go ahead. We're just going to be open.
You're making
for discussion.
Him think.
So, no, not necessarily his music, but his dedication to the craft and his dedication to the fans never wavered all the way up until the end. Tom Petty was born October 20th, 1950, in Gainesville, Florida. First band was the Epics. But much like the originals and the new originals, they thought that was kind of boring.
The originals and the new originals. So
they went with the name Mudcrutch.
I remember that.
Yes. Yes.
Great documentary out there, guys.
Yeah, never seen. Fantastic. It's really good. Yes. Running Down a Dream.
Right.
Name of the documentary. Went to California.
California!
And the record company decided they wanted Tom as a solo artist. So this is where you could maybe argue he sold out, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a good... it's a good thing. Know, whoa, kinda. Dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Oh, it's Tom Petty, dude. I think we're going to have to, like, kick him off the list.
Hold on now. Hold on now, brother. So Tom ends up putting together a band of his own choosing, and they end up calling themselves the Heartbreakers. Now, this is where I think it really falls out. He didn't sell out. He fought MCA to get his publishing rights back. Matter of fact, he not only won his publishing back, they actually gave him his own record label. So that was kind of cool. Again, a little bit later on, he fought MCA again because MCA decided, since he was such a big star, that they were going to increase record prices from $8.99 to $9.99, and they were going to do it starting with his album. Well, Tom wasn't too happy with that. He said no. He absolutely refused. He didn't want to screw over his fans. So again, MCA kind of buckled, and his album was not
like a
the
belt.
First one.
He buckled like a belt. Buckled like a belt.
Right. Why do we always become Cockney British every time we do this show?
You said the C word right on my podcast.
So it could get much worse than that.
I meant him. Anyway, that album was Hard Promises.
Kev,
yeah.
Brother, in the microphone.
Oh, I am. Well, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, please.
I'm not a professional like Yin's guys is.
But even in the end, unfortunately, October 2nd, 2017, Tom was found unresponsive. He died from a fatal mix of pain meds, sedatives, and antidepressants. The pain meds were for a hip fracture. He had fractured his hip, but he was putting off surgery because he wanted to finish the tour for his crew and his fans. And unfortunately, it led to his demise. So that's where I was coming from with Tom.
You're absolutely right, and I did not realize. You know, nobody is. So we all have to get in situations like where we have to make really tough choices.
Yes,
and most of us, luckily, that choice is between us and the few people that know us, and that's that. When you're a rock star, you know, that choice can, like, you know, come out and lots of people can judge you for it. And the situation with Mudcrutch, boy, but he did reunite Mudcrutch.
He did, yes.
And they put out an album, and I thought that was, like, okay. Very, very cool. In terms of not selling out, that's the kind of record that, like, I don't know who his record label was at that time, but that's the kind of record that, like, you would go to your record label and say, look, you know, I was in a bar band with these guys and they couldn't cut it in California. So, you know, the record label picked me all of many years ago. Now I'm going to do a record with them. And they're going to be, what? You know, they don't know any of these guys. It's like, I mean, it would be a tough sell. And if anybody could sell something like that, it'd be Tom Petty.
Right. Yeah.
If you think about it, he's the kind of guy that could convince them to let him do something. That's just good. Because Tom Petty was in it, it did get some songs, couple songs on the radio. I remember when it came out. And I was like, good for you, Mudcrutch.
Did you say it out loud?
There's so many people that, like, you know, did really shitty stuff that you don't even know about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know any other rock star that went, but, like, this is the cover band that I left behind, and I'm going to do a record with them. Like, do you know? Are there any other? I've never heard of anybody else doing that.
It's not a common thing for sure.
You know. No. So if you want to put the, he kind of put puts the I in integrity with something like that. And the way he stood up for the album prices, I remember that was a, I remember it was a big story. I remember that was a current story.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could dig Tom Petty. I think this is an example too, even musically. I think this example of a guy who did want to explore different stuff. I mean, listen to, there's some like great songs from the 80s that have like terrible keyboard sounds on them. They're like embarrassingly bad. It's like there's a certain, there's a couple of these different keyboard patches that were really popular, and they're like on a million things. The one of the things I'm thinking about is that artificial flute thing that's at the beginning of Clapton's redo of After Midnight. You know what I mean? And that sound is on a million things from that era, and it's just like grates on your freaking nerves.
It pierces his brain.
And Tom Petty, he had an 80s era where he experimented with, you know, where he had stuff like that in it. Although nothing that like, you know, grates on your nerves, because Tom is just amazing. He's Tom.
It's Tom.
You know, so even when he was doing stuff like that, he retained the Tom Pettiness of it. It was never like, well, you have to write songs about this or that. He adapted to the frickin' MTV age like that, man. Like, they just like knew how to fit him in, and he was able to really appeal to a like a really big wide audience with what he was doing. People like us who are like real rock and rollers really liked him, but he had big hit songs, so people who were just like his songs because they liked it, pop music, really enjoyed him as well. And he never really felt like he was pandering to either one, did he?
No.
I just don't get that from him.
He just
like,
did his thing.
I tell you what, man, like, I don't know who the rest you guys have on your list, but like, dang, like if that guy might not even be number one. I mean, it's pretty freaking impressive. I mean, it's the definition of what we're talking about tonight. This next band, it broke my heart because I haven't looked at their Wikipedia page since 2019. And in early 2020, Neil Peart died. So the page used to say, Rush is a Canadian rock band.
Right.
Now it says Rush was a Canadian rock band. And that
stings.
It's gets you right in the feels.
Do you need a tissue?
No. Oh no, not for that. Okay. Rush, a Canadian rock band formed in 1968. Oh man, Geddy Lee, of course. Do we have to say who Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson were?
No.
Neil Peart on drums, but the trio did not start out, by the way, with Neil Peart. Neil Peart replaced John Rutsey. John had health problems. This was a kind of like, this is going to be a kind of mud crutch kind of situation, except they never brought Rutsey back, but he had health problems. And it was just like, these guys were going places. They put out, that working man got on WMMR in Cleveland. And people were like calling up like, that's the new Led Zeppelin. Play that again. No, it's a band called Rush. Yeah. And so that really, they really exploded. And I don't think that they even expected any of that. They're all, if you ever seen any interviews or know anything about these three gentlemen, they're all kind of unassuming.
Right.
Kind of anti-rock stars. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're like music dorks. There's like, these are like the kids in the AV club, you know, who played guitar, you know. And
plaid pants.
Yeah.
But typically those are the ones that are the best musicians.
And so they have this giant success, and they just got to leave John behind. He's just not going to cut it because he's not physically well. But they get Neil Peart, and the rest, you know, sort of like just history. Achieved commercial success in the 70s with several albums, including Fly By Night, 2112, A Farewell to Kings, Hemispheres. The band's rise in popularity continued through the 80s and 90s with some albums charting highly in both Canada and the U.S., including Permanent Waves, Moving Pictures, which is a... seminal album for me, Signals and Counterparts. Rush continued to record and perform until 1997, after which the band entered a four-year hiatus due to personal tragedies in Neil Peart's life. The trio regrouped in 01 and released three more studio albums, Vapor Trail, Snakes and Arrows, and Clockwork Angels. I saw the Snakes and Arrows tour. Did you were at that tour?
Did you? Yes.
Yeah.
That was the one. Yeah.
Yeah. And fantastic show. Rush ceased large-scale touring at the end of 2015, and Lifeson announced in January 18 the band would not continue. In 2000, on January 7, 2020, Peart died of a type of brain cancer, age of 67. Rush is known for its musicianship, complex compositions, and eclectic lyrical motifs, drawing heavily on science fiction, fantasy, and philosophy, Ayn Rand. The band's style changed over the years from blues-inspired hard rock in the beginning, later moving to progressive rock, then a period marked by heavy use of synthesizers before returning to guitar-driven hard rock since the end of the 1980s. The members of Rush have been acknowledged as some of the most proficient players on their respective instruments, with each winning numerous awards in magazines' reader polls. Rush ranks 88th in the U.S. with sales of 25 million albums, and industry sources estimate their total worldwide album sales over 40 million as of 2005. Rush has been awarded 14 platinum, 3 multi-platinum albums in the U.S., plus 17 platinum albums in Canada. Rush was nominated for 7 Grammy Awards, won several Juno Awards, that's the Canadian version of the Grammys, and won an International Achievement Award in 2009, SOCAN Award. The band was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in 94 and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2013. I still don't understand what Alex Lifeson was doing with his acceptance speech. But Rush, and this is a band that like just kind of wandered around, and people just kind of left them alone because they knew that like there was going to be like there was those fans that were just going to buy every Rush album. It didn't matter. They just had
super
to have,
fans.
Yeah, they just had to have every Rush album. It was just the and it was like kind of a growing audience. Stylistically, it's all great. I think their music sounded, especially those last three albums, with the Snakes and Arrows, Clockwork Angels, and what was the one before it?
Vapor Trails.
Vapor Trails.
Very good.
I think that those albums are kind of timeless in the way that they don't really sound like alternative rock. They don't really sound like regular, you know, classic hard rock. They don't sound like metal. It's got like a really kind of like...
It just sounds like Rush.
It just sounds like Rush, and it sounds really good. Mm. So they can kind of sneak in wherever, and really where they excelled was the concert. I mean, they were packing these places. Mm-hmm. I mean, people like up until the very end. I'm sure if Neil Peart was alive and everything, and post pandemic, that it'd be like planning the next tour. They'd be like, you know, shit, we got to go back out because we can't like not play after all this,
right.
They might be limited, but I'm sure that they would go out and do it. And if you've never seen them live, man, you missed a good show. It was they put on a hell of a show, and people know all the lyrics. I mean, this isn't like, I'm all about that bass,
Oh, please stop singing that.
It isn't that.
This
you know what I mean?
This
is like a lot of words.
There's more than two words.
And like, it's mostly white people. Black people are good with a lot of words because they got that rap thing, man. And they could like,
freestyle.
Yeah. I mean, I was around a group of African-American folks a couple days ago, and they were listening to the hip hop stuff, and their words were flying by, man. They were right on it. So, you know, white people, we trip over that stuff.
Yeah.
You got to need to be congratulated if you could sing every Rush word.
Yes.
Because they were wordy.
They were very wordy. They're a very wordy band. So I can't really see them. I mean, I can't know of anything they ever did that was, I mean, they were more than willing to like goof on themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there's great, like later on TV interviews with them where they were like very cool about, you know,
their garb.
Yeah.
Their garb back in the day, the kimonos.
Yeah. I mean, they were very happy to kind of like, you know, take it on the chin a little bit and everything.
Yeah.
So I would, I think they definitely deserve to be on this list right here.
Did not sell out.
And so far, you know, I think that everybody, I think you're right about the Ramones, Lily, mm-hmm. Kevin with Tom Petty and Rush. I think that, I think so far, I can get with what everybody's, laying down. Do the audience have any?
Audience.
Let's see if the audience has anything other than talking amongst themselves. Chris Underwolf Dotson says hello from Raven and hello. Himself. Bill Damiano's watching. Todd Kane is in the house. Tracy Sampson is watching. Bill Damiano and Chris are talking.
Oh, I'm glad.
To each other. And that is it. So nobody actually suggested anything that I see.
Okay. All right, then. So then let's go back to Lily.
So I'm going to go super heavy.
Super heavy!
With Cannibal Corpse. Ah. They are the best-selling death metal band, American death metal band of all time, formed in Buffalo,
you
New
don't
York.
Say.
I do say.
You don't say.
Formed in Buffalo, New York in 1988. I was 7, just so I can rub that in. They are now based out of Tampa, Florida. The band has released 15 studio albums, 2 box sets, 4 video albums, and 2 live albums. The band has had little radio or television exposure throughout its career. Can't imagine why. Mm. Although a cult following began to build with releases of their early albums, including Butchered at Birth and Tomb of the Mutilated. Cannibal Corpse's lyrics and albums and t-shirt artwork frequently feature transgressive and macabre imagery, including depictions of extreme violence and gore. And the band has always defended this as artistic expression that is clearly fictional.
Sure.
Some might argue that the death metal pioneers sold out by appearing in Ace Ventura, but the band never stopped playing their own monster in that infamous scene. Jim Carrey basically wanted them to be in the movie because it is one of his favorite bands. It was either them or Napalm Death. He was picking one of the two. They didn't change their music style after appearing on the big screen. The next album included a song named, and I'm going to swear, everybody ready, Fucked with a Knife. Even as they've become bigger and more famous, the Kings of Gore have never wavered from their themes of violent, perverse murder, which is why we'll always love them. As one of the top-selling American death metal bands of all time, not changing your sound, pretty much doing what they want as far as imagery goes, I think they deserve to be on the list.
Mm-hmm. Birth is always painful. Decaying in the womb, trapped within this body. Yes. A bleeding human tomb, gutted bitch lies dead, empty of the child. Chewing on the cords, its lifeline to this world. After birth is flowing, the stench is overwhelming. My body growing stronger, my pain turns to torture. Severing its bloodline. And butchered infant carcass meat from the unborn, the freshest skills. Chopped up children bathing in blood. Contoured and festering, I rot in disgust. Did I do it right?
You did pretty good.
So I started out in one way and I ended up on another thing. That is just a little bit of Cannibal Corpse for you.
Wow.
For the metal fans.
So, I mean, if they can like put out lyrics like that and just go and people love it.
So romantic.
They don't ever have to. Yeah, I mean, that's about as uncompromised. Where's the great line? Carnage is my fetish.
I like zombification and ejaculation over mutilation.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a mouthful.
Zombification ejaculation. Is that? Never mind. I would go down a total rabbit hole on that.
We could totally do that.
Crushing cartilage. There's a band name.
They're actually just
crushing cartilage.
And they're actually just regular guys.
I bet. Yeah, I'm headed down to Costco. I need toilet paper.
That's pretty much it.
Probably.
From One Wipe Charlie's.
Wow. Costco's where they get their best work. I mean,
sure.
Inspiration there.
God. Oh, wow. You guys are crazy.
Hammer smash face.
Yeah, okay. You're okay. Okay, who's next? Kevin?
I'll go. Hey, what do you guys think about Motorhead?
I love Motorhead.
I would definitely say
Motorhead. All right, good.
Lemmy. Just say Lemmy.
He's a nice boy. Formed June of 1975 by bassist Ian. You know him better as Lemmy Kilmister. It's considered the precursor to the new wave of British heavy metal. Listen to this shit. They released 22 studio albums, 10 live recordings, 12 compilation albums, and 5 EPs. Wow.
Ouch.
I mean, you know, not as good as Wilson Phillips, but pretty damn close. Unfortunately, band ceased to exist after Lemmy passed away on December 28th, 2015. Lily, you're the knower of many, many things. What's the place that has the seat that Lemmy used to...
Oh, that is the rainbow where you can have... There's the Lemmy section where you can sit there and... Where he dined and played his video games in his little
shorts. Yes. Yeah, in his little tiny shorts.
And he wore his shorty shorts there. Yes.
But I think that's cool. They still have that there in memory of him.
Yeah, I believe there's a plaque there now.
Yes.
Too, so you get a picture with
it.
So, yeah.
Maybe a little poker. Did it have the poker game there for him, too?
There, I believe that's still there. It's not in the section with all his other stuff, but it was on the, they're on the bars. They
on the bars, yeah.
You know.
Very cool. But yes,
he built up the reputation of playing to no one but himself. That is how he felt. So that is why he is not a sellout, because he didn't give an F.
Well, you know, was it Jim Florentine? Who's the other guy on that metal show? Not Eddie Trunk.
Oh gosh, this is the guy I never remembered.
Sorry,
it's
dude.
Horrible.
I think it was him.
Sorry,
I heard him talking about being backstage. It might have been Florentine. It was one of those guys. Being backstage, like 2 weeks or so before Lemmy passed away, and he was still touring.
Mm-hmm,
and they said backstage, you could tell like he was
slowing down. Yeah.
But they said the second he walked on stage and those lights came up, he sounded like Lemmy.
Don Jameson.
Don Jameson. I'm sorry. I think it Don Jameson. I mean, he was like, no freaking compromise. I'm just going to do whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just like. I mean, there will never be another guy like Lemmy.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you know, he was just, you know, he was like the consummate rock and roller, no matter like how old he got.
As much as the band has changed members, he was the constant member.
And
he played for himself. He didn't even care. Who
and
was
he
in the band.
And he was, I mean, he's become like a rock icon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's like Ozzy. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain guys that are just like, oh, that's the epitome of that thing. And
he was the editor of a school newspaper.
Really?
No, that's from a movie, Airheads. he's in Airheads and he says that.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Oh, man. So we would have believed him. You just, you know.
But I mean, I mean, he'd like drank a fifth of Jack a day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, basically lived at strip clubs, had 6 girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like. You know, there's just never going to be another guy like that.
Lemmy Kilmister, you're my hero.
Well, people frown upon that stuff now, so there's that.
Yeah, I guess he was the picture of toxic masculinity. this is a great documentary, too, about him. So if you guys can find it, check it out. Well, it's everywhere. Here's a band that is...
I almost put this...
Uncompromising for kind of a different reason. When I was really getting into writing and recording and releasing original music with bands and stuff like that, these guys were the sort of poster children for what you could do as an independent band with no record label support. I mean, these guys and Ani DeFranco were the sort of like trailblazers in truly, there's a lot of people that say indie. These guys are truly an independent rock band, and it's Fugazi, American post-hardcore band formed in Washington, D.C. in 1986. The band consists of guitarists, vocalists Ian McKay, Guy Picciotto, bassist Joe Lally and Brendan Canty. They are noted for their style transcending music, DIY ethical stance, manner of business practice, and contempt for the music industry. Fugazi has performed numerous worldwide tours and produced 6 studio albums, a film, and a comprehensive live series, gaining the band critical acclaim and success around the world, highly influential on punk and alternative music. The band has been on indefinite hiatus, since 2003. So these guys did something that was, now you got to remember, this is pre-internet. Okay. There was no like, put up a Facebook page.
I sort of hate when you have to say that, but yeah, I get it.
I mean, this was, they achieved great success without having any record label support. There was no internet. There were CDs around, but it was still heavily in the cassette and vinyl era going on as well. Created all their own merchandise, did all their own marketing. It was like a family business. Their brothers and sisters and girlfriends and wives and everything like that, everybody chipped in. It was everybody became part of the Fugazi industry. And they were able to like go out and tour, do big shows with like virtually no support. Nobody was really, and they played so they could play whatever music they wanted. They could just do whatever the hell they wanted. It didn't matter.
Screw you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. They could just, there was no reason for them to, nobody saying, if you guys did this, because nobody wanted to sign them anyways. They were just doing their thing. I shouldn't say that. I haven't read the entire biography of Fugazi. There may have been opportunities for them to do that. But in general, for what they were doing, the type of music they do, they call them post-hardcore, but Fugazi is a kind of like band that's really hard to pigeonhole. I mean, their music is not, I don't know.
It's not defined.
Somebody wants to type in the group chat and say what they think Fugazi is, I'll take it.
Believe you.
I'll believe you.
Yeah. Okay.
So that would be on my list for sure is Fugazi. Just those guys are just, they just like, we're just doing our own thing. Like, yeah, you go do whatever you want. We're doing our thing. It didn't matter. So, we are going to take a second here, and first of all, shout out to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom paint job done on your musical instrument. RockRageRadio.com. Check them out. LouLombardiMusic.com to get on the list to win the cool thing I'm going to talk about here in a second. And Rock Rage Radio, I said that. So we did a little contest. A little contest. For our, we're just running different promotions. We're trying to grow our community. And
which means you get free stuff.
Yeah, which means you get free stuff. So you definitely want to check it out. So, you'll see our stuff around the internet. Click on it. And don't forget, if you're on iTunes, please give us a 5-star and a nice little comment there. But today's prize, it's a 3-film, a Blu-ray collection, Bill and Ted Face the Music, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and, of course, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. We have a winner for that. Lily, have you seen the Bill and Ted movies?
The first one, because I don't like them.
You don't like them?
I only like the soundtracks.
How did you, when was the first time you, when did you see it?
Probably right around when it came out, I would assume. It's been that long.
Did somebody, like a boyfriend or somebody, take you to the movies? Or?
Oh, I didn't go to the movies. I just saw it at home. But
you just watched on TV?
Yeah.
TNT or something.
Something. Or HBO, whatever it is. Because we had all the fancy channels. But yeah, ooh. I'm just sorry. I just think they're morons. I know guys love this movie. It's a great movie. Actually, there are girls that love this movie, too. I think the soundtracks are fantastic, which is why I like the movies.
Okay.
And Kevin,
I remember seeing the trailer in the theater. A friend and I went to see another movie in this weird, and there's guys and they're in a phone booth and there's Napoleon. And we looked at each other. We're like, we need to see this movie. It was just so intriguing. And of course we went and saw it and I'm like, whoa, Whoa. Or,
whoa.
Super popular movies. Yeah.
I do not. I've seen this movie so many times.
Yeah.
And I've had it in so many different formats.
Yeah.
I don't remember the first time I saw it. I just remember. It's like Bill and Ted has always been in my life.
Yes.
I don't. I you know, this seems like something I would have gone to see with Eric Waggett.
Exactly.
You probably did.
It seems like something he and I maybe went to see together, but I don't. I don't remember. But I've just never not remembered this movie. There's just certain movies like that. Mm-hmm. Just, you know. So in my opinion, it's always been out. So the person that's going to get to view this collection as often as they would like on Blu-ray.
Do you have the random generator?
Well, it's already been generated. We got our number here.
I wanted
here
to do the little.
You did it. So there it is.
All right, go ahead. I'm
I did to you guys. I don't care. The winner is David B. Miller. So, David, congratulations.
Awesome.
We'll be getting in touch with you. We'll get this sent out to you right away.
Excellent.
And you will probably also see some Ludini swag showing up in your mailbox as well.
Don't forget the song Two Heads Are Better Than One by Power Tool is on the first movie, which mm-hmm. is the Nelson Brothers.
One, mm-hmm. Yeah, and was the original theme to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus
podcast.
That's
right, back in the day. Back before you were born, Lily.
But we'll be getting in touch with you to if we don't already have your physical address to get everything sent out to
congratulations.
You.
So congrats, yo.
Right. Enjoy.
Congratulations. Okay, so we are going to continue on with our discussion on these bands that are just what refuse to compromise. They're like stubborn. They're like a pain in the ass.
Ow.
It's like, why won't you try something different? No, we're going to do it. That's rock and rollers for you, just children.
Yeah, they're just...
Just big freaking babies. But we love them.
Hey, what do you
think? It's only rock and roll, but I like it.
Come on, Lily.
Don't but I love... Oh, no, you didn't.
But I love you guys. But I love you guys, regardless. Yeah.
Do you?
You guys, you're crazy, man.
Or something.
Okay, so what you got, Lily? Come on. You're teasing me.
I put a band on here that I don't necessarily like, but they do belong on the list. And Rush is not the band because Lou already said it. It's Nirvana.
Oh, all right.
American rock band formed in Aberdeen, Washington in 1987.
Aberdeen, Washington. Yeehaw, salute my hometown.
I was 5 years old. Founded by lead singer and guitarist Kurt Cobain and bassist Chris Novoselic, the band went through a succession of drummers before recruiting Dave Grohl in 1990.
Dave Grohl.
Nirvana's success popularized alternative rock, and they were often referenced as the figurehead band of Gen X. Their music maintains a popular following and continues to influence modern rock and roll culture. After the monument...
Rock and roll.
And roll.
And roll.
There's rock culture and roll culture.
There's two different kinds.
Both kind of music.
After the monumental success of Nevermind, Nirvana could have easily released a candy-coated pop rock record and welcomed universal praise. The band's first record, Bleach, was pure grunge, with Cobain writing what songs that sounded like the Beatles being fed through a punk amplifier. Even when the label was set on getting Nirvana in a studio with a big budget producer, the band hooked up with indie legend Steve Albini and produced the Blemish masterpiece In Utero, which was probably the most visceral recording to ever reach the top of the charts at the time. Featuring a song named Rape Me and a cover that could have been used for a Carcass album. Though the band eventually crossed over with Nevermind, the sudden jolt of fame led to Cobain running far away from the more superficial aspects of celebrity culture. Ever since Nirvana started, Kurt Cobain has always had a particular distaste for the mainstream. Although he loved the pop acts of old, from Cheap Trick to the Beatles, Cobain always felt the need to run away from the bands that seemed too inauthentic. Though fans may have been aching to hear what the new Nirvana sound would be going forward, the rude awakening came when Cobain was found dead in his home of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Bullshit. The world of rock still lives in the shadow of Cobain's work, but Nirvana's back catalog is a true testament of artists who refuse to compromise their musical vision. And I think, what I've heard, and I'm a little afraid to see what you're going to be pushing there. What I've read is the reason he did end up killing himself, quote-unquote, is that he didn't want to sell himself out.
Too soon? Too soon?
Wow.
Say it again, Lily. I won't play a sound effect. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go say it again, because I think it was what you said was really important, and I made a goof over. The reason he killed himself is because he didn't want.
The reason that he, what I've read is the reason he killed himself is he did not want to succumb to the. Wow, I lost it. Mainstream rock. Why can't I? Yeah. Oh, right. He didn't want to sell out.
What we're talking about. Yeah.
Exactly. What we're talking about.
My whole brain went away.
That is, boy. Wow. If you wanted to say, I'm not going to sell out to the extreme.
He wins.
Yeah.
He kind of wins. I mean, I'm sorry. We might have to put Tom Petty down.
No.
We might have to say, put Kurt Cobain.
Lou, he did not commit suicide. You know who killed him?
His wife.
That's right. Courtney Cox.
No.
Courtney Cox did it.
Love.
She got right down off that stage. Bruce Springsteen went right over to Kurt Cobain's house and shot him. Courtney Cox. Her and her friends.
And we're done. With her little butch haircut.
Oh, you guys are freaking crazy.
You love us. Oh, boy. I don't even know what that was.
That's Courtney Cox.
That's what she sounds like now.
Uh-huh.
Courtney Cox, did not kill Kurt Cobain.
No? Legal disclaimer. Courtney Cox did not.
Officially, he killed himself.
Celebrity voice impersonator.
Yeah, right.
Unofficially, Courtney Love had him killed.
Yes. What you know what we really need?
You know, that sentence just terrifies me.
Everybody
questions. Did you get now? I know. Look, man, I can't ignore my roots. Love Howard Stern. Uh-huh. What we need though is like, you remember he would have evil David Letterman?
Yeah.
We need somebody who can do a celebrity voice really good and just say the most crazy crap. We need.
Why are you looking at me?
Do all the voices.
Kevin does good voices.
I know. I'm afraid I'll get in trouble.
I don't want to get in trouble. I'm in trouble. I don't want to get in trouble.
We could probably have some people come in. I'm just saying.
You're trying to get me in trouble.
I've got phone numbers.
Do any of your relatives say trouble?
No.
Trouble?
You in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of your relatives say accordine?
No.
Okay.
A poster?
Post
do what you're supposed to do.
I do what you're supposed to do.
There you go.
Yep.
That's the Pittsburghese.
Yeah. So speaking of Pittsburghese, Pittsburgh Kevin.
Yeah.
What do you got?
You guys, I told you what I got. Courtney Cox killed him.
That's what he has. And there it be.
Wow, Courtney Cox is on the list?
Yeah, Courtney Cox.
Cockney Courts.
Her and Phoebe.
Phoebe.
Now we've covered all the ones that I had. You know, here's an honorable mention, which I thought was interesting because I did a little research today, but one name came up a couple of times, and that was your friend of mine, Gigi Allen.
Ah! Well, that would be true.
Oh,
that
boy.
Would be true.
Boy, and kids, kids at home, if you don't know who Gigi Allen is.
Why do I have to be punished and talk about Gigi Allen?
Well, I would say look him up, but.
But really don't.
But really,
you're doing yourself a favor.
You would have
not
to be a hardcore researcher into this field to look that up. And
you
it's
will hate your whole life.
Yeah.
Nah.
But no, seriously.
But truth, that his whole thing was not going against or not going with anything that anybody did. He
at
went
all
completely
anything.
Against the grain.
Anything.
He threw shit on stage, pissed on himself,
sure.
cut himself. He's a freak.
Okay, I'm going to do... Lily, do you have any others before I do one more?
I also have Typo Negative.
Mm. Throw them on.
American Gothic metal band formed in Brooklyn, New York, 1989 by Peter Steele, Kenny Hickey, Josh Silver, and Saul Abruscato, who was later replaced by Johnny Kelly. The lyrical emphasis on themes of romance, depression, and death resulted in the nickname the Drab Four, an homage to the Beatles' Fab Four moniker. The band was platinum with 1993's Bloody Kisses and gold with the 1996 October Rust.
Awesome record.
And gained a fan base through 7 studio albums.
That was a good makeout album, too.
Of them are, because his voice is amazing. 2 best of compilations and concert DVDs. They stuck to the themes and didn't stray from the styles too far, other than maybe picking up the pace a bit or shortening the songs. Steele was a brooding goth, and we liked him that way, and he had one of the most unique voices in metal music. He died on April 14th, 2010, at the age of 48.
Go ahead.
Some sources report the cause of death as heart failure brought on by aortic aneurysm, while others list sepsis caused by diverticulitis. Hickey and Kelly stated in November 2010 interview that with French music magazine Rock Hard that Type O Negative had broken up following Steele's death. Now, if you break up your band because your singer died, that's usually not selling out.
That is,
we're done. We're not going to continue this and water it down like a lot of bands do when we talk about.
I got one question. On the day he passed away, where the hell was Courtney Cox?
She's probably on an episode of Friends.
She was injecting the sepsis into him.
Sepsis.
Because apparently she's a very diabolical person.
She just walks around trying to, what rock star can I kill next? Good ones. I am not going to do...
The Beatles?
I'm not going to...
What did I do on this day?
I did all the Beatles.
Yeah, you did.
I'll just do like an honorable mention. I'm going to get too far because I want to do this day in music. Tool.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, these are guys that like, they kind of just release a record whenever the hell they feel like it. They're on no schedule. They tour when they feel like it. Mm-hmm. They just kind of do whatever they want to do. And boy, it's just a whole package between the what they do with the visuals and what they do with the music. Kind of creating they're a hard band to pigeonhole because like metal people like them, alternative people like them, your rock and rollers like them. They have that because they could, it's just sort of floating around in this thing, but they're their own thing. And people recognize that. And I think that is a sort of kind of what this whole show is about, is that, you know, it isn't always about like, you know, kissing the most ass or being the best looking or whatever. There is that segment of the population that does want to hear something cool. Can you make something cool? Sometimes mm-hmm. that's like, you know what I mean? Sometimes that's just like all you need to do. Just make something cool. And I think this is true of the band Tool. Absolutely. That they're just like, we're just going to do something. We're going to make some good music. This is kind of just what we feel. And, you know, there is amazing musicianship in that band. This is one of those bands that gets compared to Rush as a sort of like, you know, kind of like a next generation of, you know, kind of what Rush is doing with, you know, mixed meters and, you know, the different, you know, because the drums and the bass and the guitar, the way they're all kind of interacting are kind of getting into that territory rhythmically and harmonically. Of course, they are not. Don't sound anything like Rush, but they have that sort of bringing that progressive thing in a way that was also very, very accessible with songs that just got played on the radio and, of course, on MTV, rest in peace. So, and, you know, they never did what? Did they ever do anything like cheesy, like a Double Mint Gum commercial or
no?
God, no. Have any of their songs ever been released? I mean, like the song Sober, I'm sure there's alcohol companies or something that would love.
The cheesiest thing Maynard ever did was sell wine and sign the bottles. That's probably the cheesiest thing he's ever done.
Okay.
And I'm not even a fan of Tool, but they do belong on the list.
Yeah. So. It's a, yeah, really. Dang.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they ain't playing. None of these bands are playing. These are all like in rock. I mean, these are the guys that are like really stand out. The Ramones, Tom Petty, Rush. I have shaky leg syndrome. Cannibal Corpse, Motorhead, Fugazi, Nirvana, Type O Negative, Tool, all bands that you know just gave us great music without, you know, trying to pander to us. You don't need to pander to us. Just make good music. So let's do real quick before we get out of here. Let's do a little bit of This Day in Music.
Let's and do that.
Just because the Beatles had to. Oh, second
surprise!
On the list.
Oh,
second
there
on the
you
list.
Go.
In 1958, rock and roll. Fans of rock and roll music were warned that tuning into music on the car radio could cost you more money. Researchers from the Esso Gas Company said that the rhythm of rock and roll could cause the driver to be foot heavy on the pedal, making them waste fuel.
Huh.
Hmm.
Huh.
So
I mean, that's legit, though.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
I do that all the time.
The Beatles played the last night of a 6-night run at the Odeon Cinema Westin Super. The Beatles spent the day with photographer Dezo Hoffman, who took photos of 8mm movies of the Beatles at their hotel on the beach, dressed in Victorian bathing suits and going go-karting.
That's hot.
Yes.
That's hot.
Oh, my goodness. I don't want to lay. Okay. In 1974, John Denver started a 2-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with Annie's Song, the singer's second U.S. number one song. A song was a tribute to his wife and was written in 10 minutes while he was on a ski lift. And this is why the marriage didn't last.
Yeah, but that's kind of amazing. I can't imagine sitting there writing a song in like 10 minutes.
It happens.
It doesn't happen to me.
How many songs did you write?
I've written poems that could be songs.
Okay.
There you go.
You've written poems sitting places.
Weird. No, it takes me a hot second.
Hot second.
And this day in 1974, Wings, as in Paul McCartney and, started a 7-week run at number one on the UK album chart with Band on the run.
There you go.
Sales were modest initially. Its commercial performance was aided by two hit singles, Jet and Band on the Run, such that it became a top-selling studio album of 74 in the UK and Australia. In addition to revitalizing McCartney's critical standing, it remains McCartney's most successful album and the most celebrated of his post-Beatles works. Did not know that. On this day, okay, let's go. Like, a little bit of women's right thing coming up right here. Uh-huh. Tina Turner filed for divorce from her husband, Ike, ending their ending their violent 16-year marriage and successful musical partnership. That's a strange sentence.
Wow.
Violent 16-year marriage and successful musical partnership. You can't have one without the other.
No, apparently.
Okay, I don't want to read about that. On this day in 1985, it was a good year, the year I graduated high school, Paul Young went to number one on the U.S. singles chart with his version of the Daryl Hall song, Every Time You Go Away.
I wasn't born.
Oh. Also on this day in 1985, Eurythmics were at number one on the U.K. singles chart with There Must Be an Angel Playing With My Heart, the duo's only U.K. number one single. The song featured harmonica solo by Stevie Wonder. It is not a song I am familiar with.
Yeah, really.
1986, Queen became the first Western act since Louis Armstrong in 64 to perform in Eastern Europe when they played at Budapest's Népstadion in Hungary. The gig was filmed and released as Queen Magic in Budapest. Wow. Cool stuff. 91, this day in 1991, Jesus Jones went to number two on the U.S. album chart with Right Here, Right Now.
There you go. Yeah. All right, yeah.
Unable to shift Bryan Adams's Everything I Do It For You from a 7-week stay at the number one position.
I mean, wow.
I saw a really interesting video this week about I'm not gonna say what it was about. It's a complicated story, but the guy mentioned the songs from the big albums that came out in 1991. Nirvana's Nevermind, Metallica's Black album, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik. These really important albums that, like, to this day people are listening to and rocking out to. But the number one song of the year was this silly Bryan Adams song. So it just goes to show you that, like, just because something is popular doesn't mean it has staying power.
Right.
You know, we all know those records, but, you know, that this is a song that, you know, some people from the 80s might remember. It was, you know, I think people remember it mainly because it was the movie.
Yeah.
It was in
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
1992, Michael Jackson had to sue the British paper, The Daily Mirror. They're getting sued like every other day, though, right? Over photos and an article that said he was left a scar face from numerous plastic surgeries. The suit was later settled out of court.
So he basically was crying.
That's not true, Lou. No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Tito. Yes, Michael.
Tito, give me a tissue.
I can't even stand you.
We're not doing the Beatles again. The Beatles have to.
They need to stop.
We love the Beatles, but come on, calm down.
Come on now.
James, need to calm down and all that.
Beatles.
Oh, man, I'm just Bobby Gentry. The day that Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. That Bobby Gentry. Hmm. Happy birthday to Bobby Gentry.
Happy birthday.
Known as one of the first female country artists to compose and produce her own material. Gentry rose to international fame with her intriguing Southern Gothic narrative Ode to Billy Joe in 67. Mm-hmm. That was a great year. It was the year I was born. The track spent 4 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and sold over 3 million copies all over the world. Wow, it's amazing. Her album, Fancy, brought her a Grammy nomination for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance.
She's so fancy.
Yep. Maureen, she's so fancy.
She is.
Maureen McGovern.
Yes.
Happy birthday to Maureen McGovern, born this day in 1949.
Wow. Wow.
Do you know who Michael Vaughn was, Pittsburgh Kevin?
Michael Vaughn. No, I know Vince. I don't know Michael.
No relation to Stevie Ray or Jimmy Lee.
Right.
Mike, do you remember the song Billy Don't Be a Hero?
Wow. Yes, I do.
Michael Vaughn from Paper Lace, who scored the 1974 number one single, Billy Don't Be a Hero. And.
Yes. What else?
The 1974, the single, The Night Chicago Died.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Paper Lace. I know. Crazy stuff.
You don't know that, Lily, because you weren't born yet.
I still know it.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
And we're going to... Oh, a couple more here. Rex Brown, bassist with Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Did you guys... You know, we're talking about bands that people would love to see reunite. Did you guys hear this thing that Rex Brown and Phil Anselmo are going to put together a group with Mike Portnoy... And Zach Wilde. And they're gonna do like a Pantera tribute.
As long as it's just a tribute and they don't call themselves Pantera, I'm okay with it. Otherwise, stop.
I know. On tour with Warrant and Quiet Riot.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, but in this case, the singer is still
right, yeah. But alive. I mean, you're missing two really key components to that band.
Yeah, I know. Vinny and Dimebag. Daryl. Mm-hmm. This is my brother Daryl, and this is my other brother Daryl. I don't know how many of you will ever get that reference.
Newhart.
Lily gets it. That's all that matters.
Who's watching? Lily, can you tell me?
I can probably tell
you. While you're looking that up, I also want to say happy birthday to Juliana Hatfield. And this is a guy that maybe a lot of you guys maybe know, maybe you don't, maybe a lot of you guys don't know. This is a kind of an indie-ish singer-songwriter, Pete Yorn. Who has a great song, Life on a Chain, and I have a couple of his albums, and he's a amazing singer-songwriter, very cool guitar player. So if you don't know who Pete Yorn is, you should look him up. Born this day in 1974.
All the same people who were watching are the ones talking. Tracy Sampson, Bill Damiano, okay. Chris Thunderwolf, Todd Kane.
We haven't scared anybody.
Dedicated.
Okay.
The people who love us.
All right, guys. Have a Lily V6. Go ahead and tell us about you've got a thing.
I do have a thing. It's my show is Hot Licks with Lily 6 Thursday nights on Rock Rage Radio, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Download the app for free on your phone or go to rockrageradio.com.
Yes.
Okay. And rockrageradio.com, as Lily said, LouLombardiMusic.com and LouDiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Please patronize Wolf's Customs at wolfscustoms.online. And we're going to pick an awesome topic. Congratulations to David B. Miller for winning the Bill and Ted thing. Nice. We've got more cool giveaways and everything coming up for you guys, so stick around. All right, guys, thank you so much for hanging out. I want to tell you guys that I got a request this week, and I'm gonna do the podcast anyways.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Okay, but Alec Gonzalez, who works with a radio station in Brazil, messaged me and said, I really like your song, your new song. Can you please send it to me because I want to play it.
Oh, that's fine.
For my audience. So thank you so much, Alec. I was very flattered for it. So we're going to make sure that we push the song a little bit more. So we're going to play it as we get out of here today. So guys, have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.